Antonetti v. Abbott Laboratories. Ms. Kane.
Good morning. May it please the Court, my name is Lisa Kane and I'm representing the appellants. The issue before this Court are whether the plaintiffs produced sufficient evidence from which taken as true with all doubts resolved in their favor, with all evidence construed in the light most favorable to them, and all reasonable inferences drawn in their favor, a rational trier of fact could reasonably find that the defendant discriminated against the plaintiffs because of their race, national origin, and whether a rational trier of fact could reasonably find that the defendant retaliated against plaintiff Cindy Nattiger for complaining about sex discrimination. This case was dismissed at summary judgment on the fourth prong of plaintiff's prima facie case, and that the plaintiff's comparative engaged in mitigating conduct. In this case, plaintiff's comparative, a Hispanic technician named Luna, held the same position as the plaintiffs, Antoinette, Fuhrer, and Nottinger.
Isn't the problem, Ms. Kane, that Luna admitted to the breakfast while the others initially did not? Doesn't that distinguish him from the other plaintiffs? That's a big problem I have with your argument.
Well, one of the circumstances, Your Honor, that took place with regard to Luna's admission is it took place with his former supervisor, and there had been, the conversation was as follows, something along the lines that the was he aware of any type of overbilling to clients? Luna shook his head yes. As far as the information that he admitted to the breakfast, he had already met with Adams, and this whole transpiration of events was that Luna shook his head yes, then got another forewarning from Adams prior to meeting or having a conversation with Human Resources Hess. He was on notice of the problem. And as far as his memory of the incident occurred, the problem there is, you know, basically there's a big question as to whether or not there was a violation of any Abbott's policies, because it was a working lunch, because this was a overtime shift that took place on a Saturday in which the plaintiffs and Luna and another employee named Marvin Gloria left the premises because the cafeteria was closed to basically discuss the issues as what they're going to do that day. The total amount of time that was expected to do the transfer of the calibrations was 10 to 12 hours. And one thing that was a constant factor in this particular case was that the defendants could never really come up with a formalized policy. And even Patterson, the supervisor who eventually recommends the termination of the plaintiffs, acknowledges in one of the exhibits that he did not know of any former policy with regard to this no lunch. And in fact, Gravender, the supervisor of all the plaintiffs and Luna, testified that, you know, customers are to be charged for a working lunch of any kind, and that all hours are to be charged to the client. As a matter of fact, the testimony elicited in this particular case, factually, Gravender had directed another employee named Laura Girard to bill for time she wasn't even working. So the fact that they capitalize on firing these three plaintiffs and another employee, Luna ends up with absolutely no discipline. And as far as the affirmation on the mitigation of his efforts, you know, which is what the court relied on in finding that they were not comparative, frankly, this isn't the case in which Luna actually comes forward and says, I did something wrong. As a matter of fact, all he did was shake his head. And when his deposition was taken, and that's part of the record, I mean, as far as his memory is concerned, he can't answer anything. He doesn't remember anything as to what transpired. As a matter of fact,
What is his nationality?
He's Hispanic.
From where? Is he Mexican or what?
I believe he is. Yes, Your Honor.
But now the fourth person they fired was a Filipino.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. Well, so what's the theory under which they understand, you know, discrimination against Caucasians, but then why did they fire the Filipino if they like foreigners?
Well, I don't think it's that it's not necessarily about liking foreigners. It's the lack of parity with the discipline that was issued to Mr. Luna
conduct. They didn't spare the Filipino. They spared the Mexican or other Hispanic. What's the theory of what's in their minds?
Well, as pursuant to this...
It's like Spanish people? They don't like anybody else or what?
Well, I don't think it's just a matter of liking Spanish people. There was favorable treatment that Mr. Luna was receiving.
If they're if they're hostile or somehow discriminating against Caucasians, why did they fire the Filipino?
Well, the Filipino, which is Marvin Gloria, believes that there was a discriminatory animus as well with regard to...
You can't have it both ways, can you? They're against Filipinos, they're against whites, against Caucasians, and they're for Spanish? Is that the theory? What kind of mentality is that supposed to represent?
Well, the basis of the claim was on... the fact that there was favorable treatment provided.
What is the common sense of it? What is your theory as to why a corporation would be pro-Spanish, anti-Caucasian, and anti-Filipino?
Well, Your Honor, the pro-Spanish or Hispanic is based on the differential favoritism that was given.
That's not my question. My question is, can you attribute some rational motive to what... I can understand how a company could be hostile to minorities, and I can understand how it could be favorable. It might be under pressure of some sort from customers or from the EEOC or something to increase their minority employment.
Mm-hmm.
But what is the theory here under which they favor a Spanish person or a Hispanic person and disfavor a Filipino?
Well, in this particular case, Mr. Luna specifically had been complaining about what he believed to be unfair treatment at the time, not the least of which was training and assignments. Whether or not part of the decision-making on behalf of the defendant was based in fear is left to be questioned. But one thing that should be noted is that the circumstances that led to the termination of the plaintiffs certainly was not similar to that which occurred with Luna. Luna, at the end of the day, didn't even receive discipline. And the policy of which the defendants rely upon is... I'm sorry?
You're into your rebuttal time.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Let me just ask you one question about Luna. Is it your theory he was spared because he worked in Mexico? I noticed that one of the days he was interviewed, he was on assignment in Mexico.
Yeah, he was, Your Honor, he was, Judge, he was immediately put on an assignment in Mexico at the time. And his interview was not even similar to what the plaintiff's experience, which was both Hess and Patterson, a manager, going in individually with each plaintiff and throwing their time card and saying, what'd you do on this day? It was completely different. And Luna had forewarning of everything that transpired.
Yeah, now, no, I was just wondering if that was a reason that they wanted to keep him because they had business in Mexico and he could speak Spanish. I was just following along the lines of Judge Posner, but that's okay.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to reserve some time for a rebuttal. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Cain. Mr. Sarafa?
Good morning, and may it please the Court. Derek Sarafa on behalf of the appellee, Abbott Laboratories. This is a case in which the three Caucasian plaintiffs are claiming that their Caucasian supervisor discriminated against them when he terminated them for time card fraud, and the basis for that, of course, is that their fellow Hispanic employee, Juan Luna, allegedly engaged in the same conduct and yet was not fired. The specific standard that's applied when looking into whether one is similarly situated to a comparator is whether the plaintiff engaged in such similar conduct without differentiating or mitigating circumstances that would explain the employer's different treatment of the plaintiff. Here, of course, there is an undisputed fact that differentiates plaintiffs from Juan Luna, and that is, upon returning from the June 10th overtime shift, in which they had a sit-down breakfast, all the plaintiffs either asked or told their supervisor to mark no lunch, NL, on their time card. So they affirmatively took steps to be paid for that time that they were on that lunch. It is undisputed that Juan Luna did not. And based upon that fact, the supervisor, Mike Patterson, determined that they had committed time card fraud and terminated them accordingly. That alone is sufficient to distinguish the company's treatment of plaintiffs from its treatment of Luna, and to make the point that they are not similarly situated and thus cannot meet the fourth prong of the McDonnell-Douglas test.
What about Ms. Kane's argument that there was no policy to fire people because of time card fraud or mismarking the cards or claiming that it was a working lunch?
Sure, Judge. On the working lunch point, first, there is no dispute that that was never articulated to Mike Patterson during the investigation. There is absolutely no dispute of that fact. So even if it were true, it was never articulated to him and not something he could take into consideration at the time he made the decision. Second, it is undisputed that in order for a lunch to be a working lunch that's billable to a customer under Abbott policy, that you have to have pre-approval of a supervisor, which they indisputably did not have. On the issue of the lack of formal guidance on a break policy, Judge, first, that relates to the issue of pretext and not to the issue of whether they were similarly situated. Clearly, the issue of pretext is not something the court needs to reach here because of the failure to meet their prima facie case. But in any event, the lack of quote-unquote formal guidance is not was not proffered as an excuse during the investigation. And in addition, Abbott terminated them based on a written policy that was crystal clear. Now, they may think it's unfair because they didn't receive guidance about it, but that's not what the inquiry is. Whether or not it's unfair is not the inquiry. The question, when you're dealing with pretext, is whether the reason is actually the true or the stated reason for the termination. Judge Posner, you summarized this issue very well in the Forrester case, in which you said, the question is never whether the employer was mistaken, cruel, unethical, out of his head, or downright irrational, but simply whether the stated reason was his reason. Not a good reason, but a true reason. And in the issue of whether or not they received formal guidance, that doesn't indicate that it was not a true reason for the termination. And this court stated in the Reed case, in which an employee claimed to not have knowledge of a sleep policy, that was evidence of pretext. And the court said, no, it may establish unfairness, but not pretext. In addition, Judge, as a factual matter, that point is totally taken out of context. Patterson's notes, in which it says there's no formal guidance, which is the only evidence upon which, or the key evidence, I guess, upon which they're relying, states that there was no formal guidance on how long you need to work to be eligible for a break, how long a break should be when working less than 8 hours. In other words, the inquiry was, if you work less than 8 hours, are you still entitled to the 2 10-minute breaks for a total of 20 minutes? There may not have been formal guidance on that particular issue, but that was irrelevant. Their break was 45 minutes. So the issue of the lack of clarity in the policy, if there's any, was on an issue that was totally unrelated to the plaintiff's conduct here. The idea that employees, that somehow it came within the auspices of Abbott's policy, or that this kind of conduct was ever condoned, is not supported by one piece of evidence on the record. Every one of the plaintiffs testified that they themselves had never taken an off-site meal break during an overtime shift and then marked no lunch on their time card, and that they were unaware of any employee at Abbott ever doing that. So the idea that somehow the policy might be construed broadly enough to cover the conduct here is just unsupported by the record. The idea that was articulated by Ms. Kane that somehow Luna was not forthcoming enough here as an attempt to make it appear that he was not, that the differences between plaintiff's conduct and Luna's was small, is without merit. It is undisputed based on the record that Luna provided Adams, Hess, and Patterson with the relevant details of the shift, including that the group worked in an overtime shift where they met before the shift, that they went off-site for a sit-down meal, and the approximate length of time of the shift. The fact that he may have been ambivalent or a little bit squeamish for informing on his colleagues is, of course, understandable and doesn't make what he told them any less true. The idea that somehow he didn't disclose the June 10th shift is also, there's no support in the record for that fact. It is undisputed, as the district court noted, that it was Luna's discussions with the supervisors that precipitated the investigation specifically into the June 10th shift. That was the only source of information, and thus it's clear that he provided that information to his supervisors. The sole basis for plaintiff's contention now that he only admitted to some general activity that was happening is based on notes from Mr. Hess, and they focus on one portion, and they ignore another portion of the notes in which he states, breakfast, slash, went to restaurant, met an AP9 in the morning, and left. In other words, it was in that first discussion in which Luna provided this information. The fact that he provided this information to Adams, his former supervisor, and not Hess or Patterson in the first instance is also irrelevant. First, it was never argued before, and thus it's been waived. And second, so what? Yes, he provided the information to a superior when he was questioned about it, and he told the truth. The fact that it was one superior as opposed to another doesn't change that issue. I would like to note that the issue on which the district court ruled and the primary issue before the court is this issue of whether there is similarity or whether the plaintiff and Juan Luna were similarly situated. Many of the arguments raised by plaintiffs at argument and also in their briefs relate solely to the issue of pretext. Of course, pretext could be an independent basis for the court to affirm the ruling, but it need not get to that issue if it rules that the fourth prong of the prima facie case was not met. But it would be appropriate for the court to find that there is a lack of evidence to support pretext in this case, in large part due to the fact that the underlying conduct at issue here, the conduct that underlies the time card fraud, the going to the lunch, the placing of the no lunch on the time card, on the time cards, and the subsequent inability to remember, and Patterson's conclusion that they were lying in those initial meetings, the conduct underlying those issues is undisputed. And thus, what the court is left with is simply to determine whether Patterson was right or made a good decision or a wise decision when he decided to terminate them. But that is not the role of the court in these employment cases, as the court has repeatedly said that it will not serve as some type of supervisory HR body. If the court has any further questions, I'll take them.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Sarafa. So, Ms. Kane, how much time does she have? 2 minutes? Okay.
Thank you so much, Judge. I just have a few points to make. Mr. Sarafa's statement to this court that there is absolutely no evidence of overbilling clients is completely belied by the record, specifically in that we have the testimony of the supervisor of the three plaintiffs and Luna, who specifically stated on the record in his deposition, were you instructed by someone to provide Laura Gerard with the calibration charge numbers? No. Laura Gerard had not done the work, right? Right. And despite the fact that Laura Gerard had not done the work, her time was charged to customers, right? Well, we all have to charge our time if you work an eight-hour day, whether you charge it to the customer or all customers. So clearly that is a practice that is going on. Most importantly, in regard to the similarities, as this court has found in Humphreys, this is not an inflexible requirement. And we have the situation in this particular case where the plaintiffs and the comparable all held the same position, engaged in the same conduct, and the only question is whether or not this court views Mr. Luna's shaking of his head sufficient mitigation to eradicate the fourth element. And I respectfully request that you reverse the district court's decision, and I thank you so much for your time and consideration. And I hope you have a really nice day.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Kane, and same to you, and thank Mr. Sarafa, and we wish him a nice day also.